From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear a conversation with Olena Karchenko and Michael Sampson, co-authors of the new book for children, The Story of Ukraine. Olena Karchenko is from Dnipro, Ukraine. She lives in the USA with her husband and daughter. She volunteers for different projects trying to help Ukraine resist Russian aggression and has been doing so since 2014. Olena hopes that this book will help people around the world to learn more about her motherland. Michael Sampson, a Fulbright scholar to Ukraine, is a New York Times best-selling author of more than 40 books for children. His books include Armadillo Antics, 10 Little Squirrels, and Chicka Chicka 123. Here's a little information about the book. Ukraine is rich with history and resources, culture and people, but most of all, in spirit. There is much to learn about Ukraine, and one of the best places to start is their national anthem. The lyrics of this once-forbidden song carry deep meaning for many Ukrainians and are full of passion, strength, and determination, inspiring them to keep their country protected and free. The story of Ukraine walks readers through culturally significant lines, providing details of Ukraine's land and life. Presented in English and Ukrainian, this book, which is illustrated by Polina Doroshenko, gives readers of all ages the opportunity to learn more about Ukraine. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Olena Karchenko and Michael Sampson. I wondered if you can talk about how you came to write the book for a start.
I was a Fulbright scholar in Ukraine, teaching in the university in Dnipro, the city that you probably heard about this weekend that was just bombed by the Russians and was so devastating with so much loss of life and so forth. So I was there, and the State Department ordered all the Fulbrights to leave about a week before the more full invasion. I say full invasion because most people don't realize this war has been going on since 2014, when Russia first invaded Ukraine, taking parts of the Donbass region and all of Crimea. And it just escalated on February the 24th of 2022. And so we were living in Dnipro. I was teaching at Dnipro National University and working with children in the public schools, teaching English as a new language to them, and working with teachers on techniques of how we do that in New York City with our model. So we had to leave the country. And all of us, there were 18 Fulbrights in Ukraine, were sent to Warsaw. And then Alana returned to New York City and with our daughter. And at that point in time, I started working with refugees and people coming across the border to get away from the war. But we're also active in terms of getting our voice out about Ukraine and the horrors that were happening. And that's where the book idea came from, because I was at a rally in front of the Russian embassy, and there were probably about 400 or 500 people there in support of Ukraine. And at one point in time, after they had spoken for a while, they started singing this beautiful song. And I knew it was the national anthem of Ukraine, but of course, not speaking Ukrainian very well, I didn't know the word, what it meant. I just knew it was a beautiful sound, and I saw people crying as they sang the song. And when we talked on the phone, I said, "Do you think this will make a good book?"
Yes, and I thought it will be, it's a great idea, because that way we can talk to English-speaking countries and tell more about Ukraine, and also because it's in two languages, that it will support Ukrainians to all over the world. So that is, I thought it was great, and I supported it.
So that was the idea for the book. And it's not a new idea, because I had written a book with my co-author, Bill Martin Jr., about the American Pledge of Allegiance, because we knew that every American kid could say it, but did they know what it meant? And so we talked to first graders and kindergartners. They really didn't know what words like indivisible meant. They thought it meant invisible. And we had to talk about it. It means you can't be divided. And so we put that book together. It was published by Candlewick probably in 2004. And I thought, we can do the same thing for the Ukrainian national anthem.
I loved the mission of the book was for children and families around the world to help them feel connected. And I think that's really interesting. I like the idea that children here will learn about what's happening in current events. You know, a lot of
Our children's books are about historical events, either here or around the world, but for them to learn something that's actually happening right now is that's a little bit, I think, unusual for a children's book. So I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about that and how children are reacting to it at all.
So we had several school visits in Miami, and I didn't expect, we met more than 100 kids from Ukraine, and some of them tell me, thank you so much for making us feel very important. Whatever we feel. So it was very touching, and teachers were very excited. They say it will help them to find a topic and find like a connection and find some ways to extend the topic and talk about Ukraine and talk about culture and talk about similarity. It seems like totally different culture, different language, but there are so many similarities with the United States, how people fight for their freedom and how they want to be independent. So, yeah, it was very touching and moving, and kids took it very very close to their hearts. And, you know, it just made me feel like we did something really good.
Yeah. When you meet the Ukrainian children, it must be amazing for them to feel so seen in this period of time when they're so displaced.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. I wonder if we can talk a little bit about your backgrounds, each of you, both as creative artists and also with regard to Ukraine. And I know, Michael, you said that you were a Fulbright scholar. So maybe we can start there.
So I'm a university professor, and I've taught for 30 plus years at 5 universities across the country. And right now I'm working in the PhD program at St. John's University in New York City. And I'm working with students who are doing the research and writing their dissertations and so forth. And so I've been doing that right before the Fulbright and until now. Before that, I was a dean of the College of Education at St. John's University, then at Northern Arizona University. And before that, I was dean at Southern Connecticut State University. So I had that administrative experience, but my true love is truly as a writer and as a faculty member. And so the administrative work took away from that. So I was glad after 10 years to go back to full-time teaching. And since then, I've had a lot of books, success with books getting published. So it's just being able to put your priorities. So no, I'm a person who has a PhD in creative writing in the area of linguistics and literacy from the University of Arizona in Tucson. So that's my background.
Okay, wonderful. Because in your bio, I noticed a lot of mentions of different newspapers. And maybe have you written as well for newspapers?
So what happened is, yes, in the early days of my career, back in the 80s, I did write editorials about our view of how to teach reading and how to teach writing. But I've been moving more into textbooks for university students for courses they take and so forth about the writing process. But when I was in Warsaw, I had to get the voice out of Ukraine. And so I did that by writing editorials that I sent to major U.S. newspapers like the Chicago Tribune and New York Daily News and so forth. And so they were just really to talk about Ukraine and what was happening there.
I see.
And so I have written in that area. But that's just something that I was able to do to help people understand Ukraine and build support for Ukraine, because I knew that without the world, Ukraine would fall. But with the world, with their fighting spirit and their love of their country and the desire to defend their country, they could succeed. And so that was why it was important for me to be a vocal writer to the people talking about Ukraine.
And what was your initial association with Ukraine? What brought you there initially?
So going back to my career as a writer, in the 80s and 90s, I wrote academic pieces, research articles, and textbooks and that type of thing. But in 1993, I had my first children's book published, which was about a future Super Bowl game. And so I started writing that love I have for young children, especially with sports and so forth. It was so successful by 2004, I quit the university job at Texas A&M Commerce and I moved to Europe, and I was based in Germany, and I was working mostly with the Department of Defense schools in England and Italy and in Germany, and also international schools in Berlin and that type of thing. And so I spent 3 years as a writer, and so my first trip to Ukraine was to speak at a at a school in Zaporozhye, which is also in the news now because of the power plant there, the nuclear power plant that's been taken by the Russians. And so that was my first connection to Ukraine. I love the country. I love the people. I love the food. And so I always harbored a desire to go back as a Fulbright scholar. Right. And so after the stints as a dean was where I was able to apply and I was accepted, and I was so excited to be there, and we were loving it until the war started.
Okay, wonderful. And Elena, how about you? What's your background?
I was born in Ukraine and I grew up in Dnipro. I graduated from Dnipro University and we met in 2005 in Ukraine. Michael, yes. And I just want to add, I want to say a big thank you to all the journalists and people who wrote pieces from the first days, from first hours when invasion happened. It helped so much. It helped so much to show the real picture and tell the world the true story. So, yeah, it's very important now with all the technology available to be connected and to have news from the first hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sounds like I want to talk about the Ukrainian national anthem, which I actually, it's funny, last year I played it on piano for my piano class because my piano teacher gave it to me because she really wanted to spread the word about this as well. So I'm a little bit familiar with it, but I hadn't looked at the lyrics in a year. And do you mind if I read the English translation? Is that fine with you?
That'd be wonderful, yeah.
The glory and freedom of Ukraine has not perished. Luck will still smile on us, brother Ukrainians. Our enemies will die as the dew does in the sunshine. And we too, brothers, will live happily in our land. We'll not spare either our souls or bodies to get freedom, and we'll prove that we, brothers, are of Cossack kin. And actually, I pulled that off the internet. It may not be the exact lyrics that you used in the English translation in your book, but so that's the general sense of it, which is, you know, it's not a long anthem. It's not several, you know, stanzas and choruses over and over and over, but it's very beautiful and direct and specific. So that is the basic tenet that you based the book on. And I was interested to see that instead of starting with that first line, you did start with sort of a little bit of the geography and the history. And then you moved into the anthem. So I just wonder, you know, how did you decide to structure it? And where did you decide to put the pieces of the anthem around the other text?
I think because it's a book for children, it's good to start with something that they can feel related to. It's like they're traveling. And Polina did a great job. She showed a boy and a girl on the map, so they kind of guide in the story. And also, we have a daughter. She's 13. And I noticed in different schools where she was, children, they don't really know much. So she's like always telling them, and I feel like I'm talking to kids, and I just try to tell them in their language so they would be interested to learn more about different country and different continent with different languages.
They didn't even know that Ukraine was a country. When you said they don't know very much, you meant about Ukraine.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Okay, that's actually a little disappointing that they didn't.
No.
This was pre-war, okay.
It's before war.
And we still have adults. They confuse Ukraine with Russia. They think Ukraine and Russia are the same. And so it's a horrifying thing because if you trace our book, you read about how Ukraine was a vibrant nation in the 1860s when the national anthem was written to protect them from Russian attacks then. And even before the Soviet Union was formed, Ukraine was an independent country, and they sang the national anthem, but they were invaded by Russia in 1919, 1920, and they were forced to join the Soviet Union. So as an American, I never knew that history. I just thought that they were, you know, a willing participant in the Soviet Union, but they weren't. And so that was why it was such a great time in 1991 when Ukrainians voted 92% to leave the Soviet Union and become an independent country again. Mm-hmm. And that was the final straw, I think, that broke up. They weren't the first country to leave the Soviet Union, but they were one of the big three. The big three of those 14 Soviet states are Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus. And so by losing Ukraine, it totally broke up the Soviet Union, which was a good thing from the American perspective mm-hmm. and from a perspective of democracy and freedom.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also confusing to people because part of Ukrainian population, I think 40% or a little more, they speak Russian. But it's not because they like Russia. It just historically happened. And people confuse if they speak Russian, they probably want to be in Russia or they like the country, but it's not true. And I told Michael, there are many countries, they speak English. It doesn't mean they want to be Great Britain.
That's right. And so my early years, I was born in Texas, near Dallas in East Texas, and many people there speak Spanish as their first language. It's just their language. It's not their allegiance to Spain or Mexico, as it would be. It's just the language. So I think we still have a lot of education to do because Putin did use that for propaganda. He said, I'm invading Ukraine to free the Russian-speaking people that are enslaved there. And so that's not true. They do not like Russia. They love their own country. And so that's another propaganda piece that our book, hopefully, and our interviews will help dispel.
It's so exciting to look at this book. I want to just make sure we don't forget to say that. This book is so beautiful. It's filled with color. The illustrator did a beautiful job of conveying what you were sharing. I think Publishers Weekly called the artwork folklore style, which I thought was apt. It's this collage and layovers of different things, patterns and historical figures and plants and trees and children. And so anyway, I just wonder, I know you aren't the illustrator. Polina Doroshenko was. How did you find her? Did your publisher find her?
Alona found her. You can tell that story.
Yeah, we just look for some artist and I found Polina. We call her. And she was in Barcelona, Spain, with her five-year-old daughter. They ran from Kiev when the attack started. And we talked to her, and she was like, of course. And Polina, she's a teacher. She's a graphic designer. She teaches students how to work with art, with technology. And she was so happy to participate. And she was like very excited. And she brought a lot. Like, words is one thing, but she was so involved in that part, and she wanted to share.
And I would say that her visual representation is much deeper than our written description, because she shows a lot about Ukrainian history that we don't talk about. So the visual is powerful. And I think, unfortunately, you almost have to be Ukrainian to understand some of it. She does use a kids looking through a magnifying glass as if they're looking back in the past, and she shows the Cossack people maybe in black and white instead of color at some part. So she really does graphically show the history of Ukraine through her art. And there's artifacts like treasures of pottery that are in the museums in Kyiv that you don't know they're there, but that's where she got them from.
Right. And there's the trident, which I guess is a similar word in Ukrainian, but it's a little bit.
Okay.
In Ukrainian, it's trizu, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that you make, that you cannot, in a children's book, fit in everything that you managed to get in this book, thanks to the illustrations. There's just so much. And as they look at it, they'll have questions, and perhaps they'll look into what those illustrations represent, and they'll learn even more. And that's wonderful. Because unfortunately, the text has to be, you know, sort of what they can take in as far as just, you know, listening or reading.
And you also have, as a writer, you have restrictions in terms of length. It's not like a novel where you can just keep writing, because the publishing process, we call it signatures. And so a signature is 8 pages. And so you get 4 signatures or 32 pages in a book like our book, and that's it. And if you had another signature, it'd be more expensive, it'd be thicker, it'd be improbable to publish. But we couldn't get it down to 32 pages. So the publisher gave us a half signature. And so this book is actually 36, where most picture books are 32, because Alona kept adding stuff to it. We had a conflict as writers, because I said, no, this needs to be simple. And she said, but you can't leave this out of a book about Ukraine. And so she won, fortunately, because she was right.
We had drafts, and then when they told us, now you guys have to cut parts of it and leave it behind, I was like, how we can leave behind the story? I don't know. It's very hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you end up having to cut anything though?
No, we kept it. Some of the
material that we cut, we put into the front matter. And so if you read the front matter, there's about a half page that adds some of the stuff to it about the origin of the national anthem and how it was adopted, the official version, I think in 1992 by the government of Ukraine and so forth. So, but no, the publisher understood the gravity of this and the importance of this. So they let us have more pages.
Yeah. Now you say that about the front matter. That reminds me that the book is intended in part to help parents and teachers share deeper discussions with children about this subject matter. And I'm sure the front matter is something that the parents and teachers will probably focus on more than the kids necessarily. So have you been hearing from teachers and parents about their experiences or asking for advice about sharing this book?
I've been hearing from my adult American friends. They told me that they actually learned something new, like something they didn't know before they read the book. It was good.
Oh, absolutely. I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm. And teachers and librarians are used to doing this. And so it's natural for them to extend the book and help connect the books to the children's lives, I think.
Now, I liked the way that Well, actually, before I go on with the text of the book, I do want to ask, what roles did each of you have in writing the book? Who did what as far as writing or I know that probably Elena was doing most of the translating if there was stuff to be translated, but I don't know that for sure. Michael, are you fluent in Ukrainian?
No. As a matter of fact, I took a university course in Russian before I went there, and it gave me just speaking phrases, that type of thing. But I was so perturbed that I stopped studying Russian. So I switched to studying Ukrainian. Because the part of Ukraine that I was in, Russian is the street language, and so that's why I studied. But no, I'm not fluent in Ukrainian, and so it's one of those things. I've written a book and I can't read it because it's in Ukrainian, and so some of the things I don't know. I can't read the Ukrainian part. But the process of writing it, we had the middle of the book because we already had the national anthem, and so then it was just brainstorming together what would we say about Ukraine, and so that was kind of brainstorming, and from brainstorming, we got content. From content, I would write the English version. She would edit the English version and then translate it into Ukrainian. So it was a give and take, a very close partnership in terms of creating the text. And so we had to come up with one voice, but we did that successfully.
And I think that you did a beautiful job. There's this back and forth between the anthem and then some expanding of the theme of whatever lyric you've just shared. So, for example, the glory and freedom of Ukraine has not yet perished is part of the anthem. And then you write, Ukraine is a glorious country where the people are free to make their own decisions in life and they live on no matter what challenges come. So you expand on the anthem beautifully to give us something to think about beyond just the words of the song. That was really nice.
Well, thank you. And that came over from our book, I Pledge Allegiance. We had the same thing. We explained what it meant. And of course, in doing that, we're able to get deeper than just the words in the anthem to really get to the meaning and the history of it. So thank you for that. But that's exactly what we're trying to do is to just to make it come alive and give deeper meaning to it.
I will say that in the Pledge of Allegiance, it would be more fun if it was invisible.
That would be. That's right. Oh, and Invincible, too, because Invincible was one.
Yeah. Let's see. So you have shared that the text is in both English and Ukrainian. Are there plans for it to go to other countries and be translated into other languages?
They did. I think they sold the rights to
12 different countries that bought the rights, and actually the illustrator.
Yes, Polina, she didn't. She makes the text of the anthem. It's like an art.
Yeah.
It's not printed. It was like
collage.
Collage, correct. Yeah. So now she has more work.
It's a problem when it's in Polish or and some other language. So she had to redo that for every language, for 12 different languages.
So they're going to print it in 12 different countries in their native language and English. So now our artist has more work to do to collage in their languages, the words.
Well, hopefully she'll be compensated nicely for that work.
She is being, yes.
She's happy because she's like her husband at the war and her daughter in Spain. So it will help.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. What was your publishing journey like for the book?
Well, it's very atypical. Normally, as a writer, it's about a 3-year process from your idea to writing the book to finding someone who will publish it, you know, through our agent to sell the book, and then to find an artist and for the artist to do it. And then oftentimes when you have art, you have to change your original story to make the fit the art better. And so it's about a 3-year process. But this was a crisis. We wanted the book out quickly. And the publisher, Brown Books for Kids, knew that too. So they put it ahead of all their other projects. And so we actually got the book out in 8 months.
Wow.
And so that journey was very different because we were under pressure to get it finished. And then Alana was under pressure to get it translated into Ukrainian. We actually used 4 or 5 of our Fulbright scholars to be readers for the text for accuracy. Mm-hmm. And then a couple spoke fluent Ukrainian. And so they were able to look at the Ukrainian text, too. And so if we really involved a team of people in terms of putting it together. And so it was a very different process, journey than normal.
Yeah, and I was thinking translating from English to Ukrainian, I tried to go as close as possible, but you cannot do that word by word. It doesn't sound right. So it was a little challenge. And also we started in March, right? We started working on book in March. And for me personally, it was so hard because I need to put my mind together. And every morning I wake up and read this news and I cannot even function for some time. Mm-hmm. So it was a challenge. But you know what? I think it was meant to be because every person who get involved, they were so helpful. And it was so easy because everybody want to make it happen. So it was great. And team and publisher, everyone who was involved, it was very easy. No problem, no challenge.
And I love the personal touches. Polina took her cat with her. And so you'll see her cat walking through the pages of the book. And so it's just that really precious, the personal love and touch she put into that.
Wonderful. Now you're on a book tour. Are you still on a book tour, or is that kind of winding down a little bit?
We actually are about to resume it. We broke it for the holidays. And so the book was published like December the 13th or so. And so we did 1 week. I was in Connecticut. Then we were in Miami for 3 days. And the book tour is resuming in February. And we're going to do about another month and doing a lot of places around the United States, but certainly including the areas where there are a lot of Ukrainian Americans, such as New Jersey and New York.
Philadelphia
and Chicago has, of course, a big community. So we're doing all of those.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wonderful. And our publishers are still putting that together, so I'm not exactly sure. But we will be in Washington, D.C., and we'll have opportunities, I think, to speak at the Ukrainian embassy in D.C. and so forth about it. And we're going to be doing some book talks. And, of course, with our tours, because we're educators, too, we take it to the school to talk directly to the audience, the children. And then we do the typical reading the book at a bookstore and that type of thing, and autographing and so forth. So those are the main components of a book tour.
So I wonder, I always ask my guests if they've read any books lately that they might recommend to listeners, 1 or 2 titles. It can be for any age group, any genre, what you've enjoyed lately when you've been doing some reading.
Well, so I'm an avid reader. I really think that one of the tools of my craft is having stories within me, and I get those by reading books. So I read about 50 or 60 novels a year. I read 1 a week. And my genre I love is the thriller books. But I thought for this presentation, I would just share that I'm a big fan of Stephen King's own writing. We think of him as a horror writer, but he is a master writer, and his advice in this book is phenomenal. And I used it in my university courses. But the new book is one that just came out by James Patterson, called The Stories of My Life. And it's very much like the King book that you, as a writer, you get so many tips about the craft. And so that's a book that I'm reading right now, James Patterson, The Stories of My Life, that I would recommend to people, writers especially, that they would read.
Wonderful. That's fantastic.
And I'm having different topics, improving my spirit and mind. So to calm myself down after war and just to be able to speak calmly and think and function, I started to do a lot of meditations and healing music, and it really worked. And then I find out about some more things like samadhi. I never even heard of it. And so I'm like getting, sometimes when I feel very stressed or like very bad and lonely and sad and like my brain is going to explode. So I started reading that Spirituality 7 book. It's 7 parts of different aspects, and it helps. It helps, like, it's like I'm learning about myself. They teach us that there are people who are very sensitive, empathic, and they give you advices how to deal with that and how to relieve yourself. And they say it will not remove your pain, but it will make you feel a little better.
So that's wonderful. It's called Spirituality 7.
Right. And the author is Lena Lind.
Okay, wonderful. That's great. It's nice, actually, that you've offered different things.
Yeah.
Yes.
It reaches a wider range of people. Who are your favorite thriller writers, Michael?
Well, Baldashi, of course, and Michael Connelly are two of my favorites. And Randy Wayne White is a writer that writes about the Florida Everglades and so forth. I enjoy his stuff. It's a marine biologist. It's called Doc Ford. And the reason I read him is he brings so much into the story that I love.
Are you planning any other books, either separately or together at this point?
Well, we're doing one together that we've just finished, and we're working on the illustrator.
So this new book will be about art of the Dnipro region, the little village of Petrikivka. They have very, very distinctive art style. And when I go home, I always bring a lot of souvenirs and decorations with all these beautiful flowers and berries. And so we decided for kids and adults will be interesting to find out about techniques and stories and history and some interesting facts about that art style. So we're going to do... And Michael come out. I was the one who said, let's try to extend the art stuff. And he come out with a fun story for children.
Yeah. So what we're doing, we're once again merging fiction and nonfiction, but had the idea of a little girl, probably 9 or 10 years old, that's in school somewhere in the United States. And her grandmother was Ukrainian. And she has to do a project about her heritage for school. So her father tells her about a chest up in the attic. She goes up there and she finds these treasures of the beautiful art from that village and a journal from her grandmother. And so she's able to take that journal to school and start sharing it with the kids. And in the history of that town, people were depressed because the winter was so long and cold and dark that they brought joy by painting flowers inside their house and then outside the house. Mm-hmm. And after that, the fences. And so that if you go to Ukraine, you'll find this whole painted village. It's just a beautiful village with all this very unique technique of art where they actually paint with cat hairs.
Oh, wow.
And natural ingredients, berries and so forth for the paint. And so in our book, the fictional, we have all this integrated into the story of a little girl. When she tells it to her class, they start painting and they go crazy. They paint their classroom and then the hall, and the principal gets into it and he paints his office. Then they paint the school buses, and then the fire department sees it. So they fire. Just like the story in Ukraine, it happens in the U.S. So it's a fantasy.
Are you going to have to get extra pages for this one?
This one will fit into 32 pages. We made it work, but I'm excited about the art. And so that we're negotiating with an illustrator, a Ukrainian illustrator, to do that. So that's a book we're doing together. So I did sign an 8-book contract with a publisher about 2 years ago, and we're about halfway through. We finished 3 books. In the spring, one of my best-selling books is written with Bill Martin Jr., which is the sequel to Chicka Chicka Boom Boom called Chicka Chicka 1, 2, 3.
I saw that in your bio. I used to read Chicka Chicka Boom Boom to my kids. I think they're too old for Chicka Chicka 1, 2, 3.
But so we have Bing Bang Chugga Beep, which is a story of a little boy whose favorite toy is an old car. And so that's coming out. The same illustrator who did Tim Little Squirrel's Armadillo Antics, Natalie Bevos, is doing that art. It comes out in March. And then with my son, who's an artist in Hollywood, who works in movies, but this is his first picture book, we're doing a book about figurative language called The Pig, the Elephant, and the Wisecracking Owl. And so that comes out in the summer. And so... And then I had written books about cats called What's the name of that cat book?
Kitty Cat, Kitty Cat.
Kitty Cat, Kitty Cat, Are You Going to Sleep? And Are You Going to School? And we didn't do the fourth one. And so we decided to write Puppy Dog, Puppy Dog, Do You Want to Play? And I just saw the art for that. So these are the traditional 2 or 3 year process. And so that book will be out in 24. And I'm just looking at the art now. So those are some of the projects in the future. The one that we're doing about the Ukrainian colored village, and then some of the more traditional books that I write for 8 and 9 year olds.
And those are with different publishers. Your 8 book contract.
No, Brown. It is with Brown Books.
Oh, so it is.
And there's an interesting story. They sold the first 4 to China, and they got a bigger advance for the sale of that to China than J.K. Rowling got for the Harry Potter books.
My goodness.
But keep in mind, there's a trick to this. It sounds what? But remember, that was a hard book to sell because publishers didn't know it would be this phenomenal worldwide hit. But
right.
Anyway.
Right. The advance is not exactly what ended up happening, probably. Okay, great. So I usually end these interviews asking for advice. Usually it's advice for writers. And if you have any advice for writers, that would be wonderful. But I also am curious about advice for parents who want to educate their children about conflict in the world, conveying truth without necessarily conveying excessive fear, which I think is probably a very delicate balance.
And in terms of sharing with kids, I really think that you share the book first, okay? Because keep in mind that when writers write books, it is a very heavily developed and edited story. And I think that my 20th draft's a lot better than my first draft. And so that's why I really encourage parents and teachers to read the story as the writer has refined it. And then from that reading, get deeper into the text of what does this mean to you? If you have pictures in your head, what do you see? And what did you not understand? What are your questions about this? And you can get into that. There's another resource I must mention because it's very unique. It's the first time I've done this. You're used to seeing stories read on PBS, like Reading Rainbow and so forth. We wanted to do it ourselves because this book is so complex. And so with a Ukrainian Fulbright scholar, we did a video reading of the book. And if you go to the QR code and the story of Ukraine and Anthem of Glory and Freedom, you click on that, you get a video of our reading that book. Mm-hmm. And so that's another resource that's there. It's even more important because my co-presenter is an opera singer. And so she's able to sing the national anthem as well as just reading it. So that's why that was important. So one tip is, since the book's about the national anthem, they should be able to hear the national anthem. And so those are my tips.
I would like to say that tip for parents and adults, there are so many Ukrainian children now around the world living, and a lot of them, they don't know English or other languages in the countries they live at. And I think that a little bit of empathy, if you can talk to your kids and explain that it wasn't that kid's choice to move this to this place, it just for their safety, their parents made the choice for them. And also that that generation of kids, they probably lost their childhood and they seen such a horrible thing that it's like they carry that pain. And if they are not social, or if they are not smiling and they're not looking like they're not very open, it's not because it's their personality, it's because they carry a heavy lift of pain and they hurt a lot. So it would be my advice just to talk to children and explain and try to be empathic as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful advice. I want to thank you both again for being on the show. Olena Karchenko and Michael Sampson, authors of The Story of Ukraine, An Anthem of Glory and Freedom, published by Brown Books Kids and illustrated by Polina Doroshenko. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us. It's great to talk about Ukraine and get the story of Ukraine out to the American audience.
Thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate you spending time and trying to talk about this topic.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was an interview with authors Olena Karchenko and Michael Sampson, whose new and important book for children is The Story of Ukraine, published by Brown Books Kids. Thanks to the generosity of my guest, Michael Sampson, we have two Write the Book prompts this week. Michael offered one that seemed rather dark, so he turned it on its head and offered another that's more upbeat. First, describe a nightmare that you've had, including setting and details that explain why it is so terrifying. Second, look into the future and write about the happiest day you can imagine, including the location, and making your emotions come alive in your descriptions. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.